you look at the admin building or the senior center and you say, yeah, I could do that in my home. And this is what it might cost me and this is what I might save if I do it.
A municipal energy audit might have some free advice for homeowners. And a local artist takes the top award in a traditional native art competition in the capital city. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more up next. An energy audit on three Hainesboro buildings was released last week and shows opportunities for improving energy efficiency and lowering energy costs for the municipality. But it also shows ways that homeowners can save money on their energy costs.
Today at the chamber meeting, Stephanie urged the folks to go on the ESC website and download those energy audit reports and look at them.
Gary Lidholm is the chair of the Energy and Sustainability Commission. The group has posted the audit online if you search Haines Energy in your search engine.
There's three buildings that were audited. One of them, the fire public safety building, is probably not a good comparison with the residential structure. But the other two, the senior center and the admin building, make a good comparison with an ordinary home. And so she was urging the chamber folks to look at that as though you would audit your own home and you get pick up some good information there.
The 75-page report covers walkthrough assessments of the administration building, the public safety building, and the senior center. That sort of audit is considered level one and uses on-site observations, review of construction documents, and interviews with operation and maintenance personnel. From there, energy and life cycle cost analysis were used to produce the draft report.
The term that he uses is ECO, Energy Conservation Opportunity. And he says, if you do this, you know, if you put in weather stripping, if you add insulation to your attic, or if you insulate your crawl space, or if you change out your boiler, this is what it will cost you, but this is what you will save over the next few years. And he's got those for every building, those ECOs lined up on cost to do the job and the expected energy savings. It's all there that you can see it. And I mean, when you look at the admin building or the senior center, you say, yeah, I could do that in my home. And this is what it might cost me, and this is what I might save if I do it.
The Energy Commission met earlier this week to discuss the contents of the report, and each commissioner will provide feedback for the final audit after the weekend.
Hopefully some priorities. I mean, there's obviously a lot of recommendations in there on all the buildings, more than the funding will permit, you know, to do. So we were going to look at the cost analysis and the payback and see what we felt was the highest priority and let the contractor know that.
At this point, the biggest energy conservation opportunities, or ECOs, might be at the Haines Public Safety Building. A $50,000 federal grant for energy-related work on public facilities paid for the audit, but the remaining money can be used to begin some of the cost-saving improvements on the fire and police department building.
What the Energy Commission will focus on first is the public safety building, because we know we've got over $40,000 there to go retrofit that building. There's some major work that needs doing there. He's talking about one of the big payback items would be to totally relocate the boiler room. And it's the boiler is apparently beyond its useful life. It's worn out anyway. And he says, rather than just replace it where it is, it needs to be relocated to a more efficient location. And he spells all that out in there. Well, that's going to be pretty expensive work. Take a lot of the money, but the payback is great.
That draft report is posted at the bottom of the Haines Energy and Sustainability Commission homepage. Just search Haines Energy to find it. A local artist took the top award in a traditional native art show in Juneau. Wayne Price of Haines won Best of Show for his carving Thlinkit helmet. It's in the form of a warrior face and uses operculum, part of the sea snail shell, for teeth, pounded sheet copper for Thlinkit eyebrows, old sea lion whiskers on the top of the helmet, and human hair, donated by Victoria Moore. The three traditional Thlinkit colors, red, blue, and black, complete the piece, but it's what's underneath the paint that gives it such power. You might even call it electric. Price said the wood for his Best of Show winning carving came from an alder tree that knocked out power in Juneau for half a day.
That wood has had 25,000 volts go through it, and it didn't crack when I carved it, and so it really had a really good start.
The show was the fifth Sea Alaska Juried Art Competition in Juneau late last week. It coincides with Celebration, a biennial festival of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian tribal members organized by the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. David Boxley judged the pieces. He's an internationally recognized Northwest Coast Native artist and awarded Best of Show and first through third places in two categories, traditional art and contemporary art. In addition, 20 other artists were chosen to exhibit their work in the show, including Lonnie Hotch of Klukwan. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute founded the competition in 2002 to promote the development of the Southeast Alaska Native arts. Since, it's awarded new creations in the form of beadwork, weaving, basketry, copperwork, and carvings. Lance Twitchell, a former Skagway resident, took third place in the contemporary art category with Raven and the Beauty of Eagle Spirit. Malcolm Miller, a former Haines resident, also received two honorable mentions for his artwork. The awarded work will be on exhibit at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center through June 27th. This week marks the final SCAT survey for Point Lena near Juneau. A shoreline cleanup assessment team will patrol the shoreline above the wreck of the Princess Kathleen. Scott Tiernan with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation is the state's on-scene coordinator for the oil removal operation. He says surveyors will look for any wildlife impacts and oil that may need to be cleaned up.
Based on our initial surveys, there was very minor oiling, and it was determined by the Unified Command that based on the amount of oiling in the weathering process, it did not need to be removed.
Divers and support vessels are now heading home. The last 3 months of operation to pump oil out of the 58-year-old shipwreck has just been completed. As Matt Miller reports, it's not the first time that a shipwreck has been investigated for potential environmental damage.
Okay, go ahead now. Give me five.
You have five.
Helmet camera footage from a global diving and salvage diver as he drills through the hull and into a fuel tank.
Oh, we got lots of product there.
Over 144,000 gallons of fuel oil and contaminated water pumped out of the wreck's fuel tanks and other spaces.
Can't make it neutral?
It's hardly unique. There may be hundreds, even thousands, of slow-ticking environmental time bombs just like it around the world.
Oh, man.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration lists over 7,000 shipwrecks in U.S. waters. Most won't be a pollution problem, but there are at least 400 sunken tankers and barges, plus 1,300 other larger vessels that may contain as much as 180 million gallons of oil. Near San Francisco, ongoing mystery spills fouled 40,000 square miles and killed 51,000 seabirds.
It went on for years. People never knew where the oil was coming from. And then I think it was 2002 they identified it.
As the sunken cargo ship Jacob Luckenbach. Kerry Walsh of Global Diving and Salvage says his company worked on that wreck, bigger and deeper than the Princess Kathleen. Nearly 100,000 gallons were eventually removed from the Luckenbach at a cost of $19 million. That incident helped spark development of NOAA's Wreck Oil Removal Program. The National Demonstration Project suggests a proactive approach, identifying potential spills and removing the oil before they're a costly and unmanageable environmental disaster.
While the Princess Kathleen is one of the vessels cataloged or one of the wrecks cataloged, that project is in the very beginning stages.
Commander Kurt Clark, head of the Response Department for Coast Guard Sector Juneau, says they passed on lessons they learned on protecting sensitive shoreline with booms, pumping oil in cold water, and working in a remote environment.
If we had a part we needed, it took 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days to get it here on a barge. And if we had two parts, we better order three, because if one breaks, it's going to take, you know, a week to get the next part here.
Clark says they didn't think that much oil was on board the Kathleen, but the operation was less costly than they anticipated.
It went about as well as could be expected. While $12 million is by no means a small number, it very easily could have exceeded that had it been a catastrophic release at some point in the future.
Expenses were covered by the Federal Oil Spill Liability Trust Fund that includes industry taxes and penalties assessed against spillers. Clark says reimbursement will depend on cooperation of Canadian Pacific Railway, the former owners of the Princess Kathleen.
That's going to be a battle. I know that the fund managers have been in touch with all the corporate entities that they can find linked back to this. To be cliche, their lawyers are talking to our lawyers. to be honest with you, I don't know how successful that's going to play out, but it's on the table. It's certainly an option, and the fund managers are taking a look at it.
It's hard to predict that catastrophic spill that Clark alluded to. Determining when steel-hulled shipwrecks will fall apart is not yet an exact science. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Reporting for KHNS, I'm Tara Bicknell. You can listen to KHNS News anytime, online at khns.org. Just click on the Listen tab for stories from the last week, or go to Archives for earlier stories.